Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 407 for comics originally released on May 27th, 2015. Now, we're doing something a little bit different this week, the next week, the week after. I'm going on a trip. We're recording early, so I put out a email to a bunch of publishers, Marvel, DC, Image, IDW, Dark Horse. Actually, I didn't email Dark Horse. They're really good about just putting the stuff up, but and Valiant and stuff. We heard back from a couple publishers. We did not hear back from, frankly, quite a few publishers. One of them flat out turned us down, which, you know, hey, that's their right. It's, you know, a little frustrating, but at least they gave us an answer. Most of them, hey, I guess their people were just busy on other stuff, so we heard nothing. So, what we're doing is we are loosening up for the next couple of weeks our categories. Normally it's a comic from DC, a comic from Marvel, a comic from someone else. As we haven't heard back from DC, we don't really have the DC ones to do. We heard back from Marvel. They said no. Okay, both those publishers lose. What that means is we're going to cover for the next couple of weeks a lot more comics from other publishers. Dark Horse, IDW, Valiant, Dynamite, companies like that. Now, this also means I'm going to be branching out a little further than normal into comics that aren't necessarily, you know, my sweet spot or whatever. But, you know, hey, that's good. Maybe I'll pick a few things up to add to my list. So, with all of that having been said, let's get into our first comic, which is Fight Club 2, number 1. This is a sequel to the movie, or the book, depending which. I gotta tell you, Drew, I know this is one you were really excited to do. I've never seen Fight Club.
Then you are going to be at a loss, I think, during the reading of this book. I would guess. I would take a guess and say that having watched the movie and loved the movie and maybe watched it multiple times really helps you enjoy this comic.
Well, it's interesting because I actually have Fight Club on DVD. I've had it for a while because I've heard great things about it. But I've also had enough people tell me who know kind of my sensitivity to violence and gore and stuff like that that maybe it's not the film for me. Having read this issue, I'm thinking maybe it's not the film for me. There were one or two places in here where I thought, wow, this just got a little,
yeah,
in some cases, just too out there. In a few cases, just, yeah, a little gross, disgusting, whatever.
Very much like the movie. It is very much like in the sensibility of the movie. So, yes,
I was afraid you were going to say that.
Yes.
It wasn't that I don't like this. It's just it's not the kind of thing I seek out for entertainment. It struck me as well done. I could follow the story. There were a couple of places that, not having seen the movie, I had some questions. I was a little confused. But eventually the issue kind of gave me enough. I was able to kind of piece things together.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's a well-told story. I just don't care for the story being told.
Gotcha.
But I think people like yourself who really enjoyed either the book or the movie would probably love this.
Degenerates. Is that what you're saying? Degenerates?
I wasn't making judgment. But if pushed... No, I'm kidding. There's no right or wrong about what somebody likes for entertainment. You know, read whatever you want, enjoy whatever you want, but don't expect necessarily everybody to have the same taste or that they're any less of a person because they don't. One of the things that kind of puzzled me, and again, we're reading preview PDF copies that we were able to get, this one off the Dark Horse press list and stuff. There were a couple of places where on the page you've got the normal comic page and then something on top of it.
Yeah, it's like you spill this pill bottle on top of the page and it covers up and obscures part of the word balloon. So it kind of trails off, and sometimes there's rose petals that may have fallen on the page. Like the comic was laid open and the characters drop something from his life on that page and obscured part of the either action on the scene on the panel itself, or maybe covered up multiple words in a word balloon. And I thought that was really unique. I've never seen that done before, but I could see how it might be frustrating for some because the sentences would just trail off and be obscured by an object of some sort that shouldn't be there.
Most of the time, it was either clear or irrelevant what was under the object.
Exactly.
But because I was reading this as a PDF, you know, it's not like I thought it was a broken PDF or something, but I'm wondering how it would have played out for me on a physical comic book page. It was an interesting technique, but because it seemed, I mean, I later gathered, oh, this is what the pills are, what's going on with that. The rose petals fits into what's going on the page. It was weird to me in so much as it's like the comic is in the world it's happening in, but it's not. But it, again, kind of fits the a little bit out there kind of storytelling sensibility the book has, or this comic has, at least. Did they do anything of that sort? Well, it doesn't matter if they did it in the film or not. We're talking about the comic here.
Right. And they didn't.
I was just wondering how they could have done something like that. It'd be almost like watching a 3D movie and then putting in somebody getting up and blocking your view for a bit.
There was some very innovative use. It's a David Fincher film, so it's some very innovative use of voiceover narration and camera techniques. And so there's some really cool stuff in there. But there was nothing like this with another layer of something over top of it. But it is very much in the spirit of the movie.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it was, again, an interesting story. This is one that I have pre-ordered, so I am getting this because I figured I've heard enough about Fight Club, I ought to check it out. Had not pre-ordered the other issues, and at this point I'm glad I didn't. For me, this, again, it's not a matter of is it good or not. Actually, it's the sort of thing, the better it is, the less I'd like it. So for me, I'm frankly going to go with a rating based on my enjoyment of it.
Which is how it should be, right?
Exactly. For me, this was a C-. However, I can see other people giving this an A-plus rating or something like that. I'm just not in that category. And again, nothing right or wrong about that. Just different things for different people.
Well, I'm probably not quite the A-plus, but I really did like this. And I gave it a B+. And if you've seen the movie, then you know Tyler Durden, you know his backstory. This is 10 years later for him, mm-hmm. the main character. There are things in here, scenes, that recollect key plot points and reveals from the movie that are surprises in the movie. So if you've seen the movie, they're great Easter eggs for you, and they're great touch points and things like that. If you haven't seen the movie and you see it and you read this comic, then those aren't going to be as relevant to you or as they're not going to make as big an impression on you when you go back to watch the movie if you're watching it for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
I think consuming order of these two media are important here. I would say don't bother reading this until you've seen the movie. And unless you have no desire to ever watch the movie, because there'll be some things in here that are really spoiled for you because they're revealed here. And you may not, I would think there's probably some things in here you didn't catch.
Oh, I would be surprised if there was not. There were a couple of things. It's like, yeah. I kind of see what's going on here, but I'm guessing.
When he met the psychologist and the stuff that happened after he went to the psychologist, I would think it would be tough for most folks that hadn't seen the movie to kind of follow what was happening
there. If only there were this thing called Wikipedia that gave a synopsis of the film, which I did indeed consult after this. It's like, yeah, that was kind of what I was assuming, but I wasn't sure.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I that's what I thought. I thought, well, there's no way you could not have seen the movie and really got any enjoyment out of this part or that part, because it would have just been confusing and not really building on anything.
Yeah. But I think that's something that happens with any comic based on a book, a movie, a TV show, a video game, whatever, that's kind of continuing the story versus retelling or adapting the story. I mean, a lot of the Star Trek novels I've read over the decades have just assumed you're familiar with the TV show. You know what the turbo lift is, you know what con and ops are, all that kind of technical
right,
level.
Right, yeah.
And if you don't, and you're like, what's going on? This at least did not leave me completely lost and perplexed.
Right.
But because I hadn't seen the movie, I didn't have the touch points, again, to either get those Easter eggs or for some of the scenes to have the relevance and punch they should have.
Well, yeah, David Fincher is one of my favorite directors, and Fight Club is one of my favorite movies. And I enjoy all of Chuck Palahniuk's books, And so this being an official sequel to the movie and the book, and it's written by the author, this was right up my alley. Now, it's not a perfect comic. There are some issues in here. There's some real confusing points for even someone who's well-versed, where it the storytelling is not as crisp as it could be. And some of it just could be drug-addled haze for the main character that is causing these really non-sequitur things to be happening, and some jumps and some nonsensical things to be happening as far as conversations and things between characters. So there could be another layer on top of this. And so in that way, the storytelling is not as crisp as I would like, but it's a fascinating read. It's very steeped in the original property. There's a lot of callbacks and Easter eggs for you. And if you're a fan of the film, you'll get some enjoyment out of it. But it has some flaws as a comic.
Well, it's interesting because I took some of those confusing narrative elements as highly intentional and, again, part of the property and the storytelling style.
Right. But they're so frustrating.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Don't get me wrong. But it's different than if it was just poorly told. It was intentionally done this way.
Yeah.
Whereas I've read a number of stories elsewhere, you know, where they leave out things because they just kind of figure, you know, and it's like, you actually got to tell us the story sometime. But yeah, this was interesting. I'm glad I checked it out.
Another thing that was a surprise, I thought, was they didn't go for any of the actors' likenesses from the movie. These are reinterpretations of those characters that are not, they don't look anything like the actors from the movie. Just a note.
Doesn't surprise me. I've seen that with a number of other properties, MacGyver and a few others. There comes a point where either you don't have the likeness, it's not worth going after the likeness, or it's really not that important.
Right.
You know, there are other cases where, you really kind of need the likeness to really sell the thing for whatever reason. Yeah.
So yeah, B+ for me though.
Cool. Again, it was interesting. Had I not been warned about the violence and the gore and that it just might be a little harder edged than I might like, I probably would have tried to have watched the movie beforehand just to go into this prepared. Basically, having read this, I'm glad I didn't. But again, that's just my taste in stories and stuff like that.
Yeah, I don't think you'd like it.
That's what I'm thinking. Shall we move on to our next book?
Sure.
This is, let me flip to the right, Adobe browser. This is Indestructible Stingray number 1. This is by IDW, the Darby Pop imprint. By the way, the artist on Fight Club number 2 was Cameron Stewart. Forgot to mention that.
Yep.
The writer here is Jeff Marsick, and the artist is Luca Regazzoni.
Regazzoni. Hey, Regazzoni.
Yeah, it definitely seems like an Italian name. This is about, it gives us some backstory on the character of Stingray from the League of Defenders. I'm sure a lot of people are like, who are the League of Defenders? Fair question. They're the superhero team from the Indestructible series from IDW Darby Pop. So when it says it's Indestructible Stingray, it's not that Stingray is indestructible. This is Stingray from the Indestructible series that kind of recently ended, concluded, or whatever.
Yeah, I missed the colon on the initial read through. It was Indestructible colon Stingray.
Punctuation matters.
It does.
On the one hand, you know, I was surprised when they announced this, to be honest, because I didn't really think that Indestructible needed one-shots around it to flesh out the characters. Don't know that I would have necessarily picked this character, but that having been said, it was actually a fun single-issue story that had a good beginning, middle, and end. There's not enough of those comics going around, that's for sure. But there's also a lot more story that can be told with this character.
Yeah.
So, if they were to go with an ongoing with this, again, Indestructible Stingray, a little bit of a misleading name, but I would certainly check it out. I enjoyed this.
Yeah, I thought it was really well conceived. I enjoyed it. I liked the character right away, rooted for her, even though she had some resistance initially from some of the other team members. And it was kind of cool to see her win the day a little bit. Mm-hmm. Some of the dialogue was... It could be in keeping with the characters from the original team. I don't know. I'm not familiar with them. It seemed a little juvenile, some of the dialogue, but that could be just the way they are. But it didn't kind of fit the same tone as some of the rest of the characters' dialogue. as they were interacting.
This is one of those where I think the creative team is good at what they're doing, but they're not like A level, you know, top name talent or whatever. You're not going to confuse these with, you know, Grant Morrison, a Brian Michael Bendis, a Mark Waid or whatever.
Yeah, definitely. And there's more on that later.
Well, so there are going to be a couple of places where the dialogue's a little, you know, okay, it does what it needs to do. It says what it needs to say, but is it brilliant dialogue? Nah, not really. For that matter, the story. Not the most original story out there. But overall, the execution's very solid. It's very enjoyable. If you're looking for, you know, fine art, the best of the best, you know, true literature, whatever, this probably isn't it. But if you're looking for a good, fun read, for me, it certainly fit the bill.
Did you enjoy the couple of pages of twist at the end for the character? Did you like that part?
You mean like the last two pages in particular?
Yeah.
Yes and no. That was part of what I felt was not overly original, but it was executed well. And the main part of the reveal, it's like, yeah, I've seen that before. The detail of who did it was a fun twist that I liked.
Right.
And they had set some of this stuff up earlier, but did I read any of this sort of a thing into what I was reading in Indestructible? No. Hell, I barely remember Stingray from that series at all, to be honest. But the position she's in at the end of this makes me think if they were to run and try to do a series with this, it'd be fun to see how it works out. So, again, it was... I like the fact it had a beginning, a middle, and end. It had some payoff. It was good, but not an it's over the end. Never is there going to be more. For me, this was, I'd probably put it at a B minus. There are a couple of things where, you know, I think it could have been polished a little bit, but yep. Nothing where I felt, gosh, it really needs that.
I'm right at a B minus as well. I mean, I think it's a good read. There's a few problems with it, but all in all, it was enjoyable. And what I found the most curious was that Marsick is a contest winner. And the writer actually was part of one of 200 submitters who wrote a story for Stingray that IDW chose his story as this first issue and to follow. And according to their marketing director, there were lots of really great, excellent submissions. And they had a lot of trouble deciding who was going to be the winner, but it was him. And so that's really cool. We have a pure amateur writer for the first time. And I think he did, when I found that out, I thought he did a much better job than maybe a seasoned veteran. I would give him a little more credit for being a first try.
I actually hadn't picked up on that at all when I read through it. My bad. For somebody's first go out at it,
yeah,
fantastic job. This is something that I would say is as good or certainly better than the average comic out there, you know, hence the B minus and stuff. And yeah, if that's somebody's first comic that they've gotten published, I think Jeff Marsick has a definite future in comics as a solid writer. Because some of this, just the more you do it, the better you get, stuff like that. There are a few things where I think the story, like I said, could have been stronger, but nothing where it was just... embarrassingly weak or should have been stronger. So yeah, for somebody's first time out where they're going to grow into writing and get more experienced, that's impressive. So yeah. He should be congratulated for winning the contest. I think it was a good pick for them to do.
Yeah, you know, I didn't know about this contest, but that's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
That they do that. And, you know, 200 other writers that he beat out for this debut. And now he has a really nice piece for his portfolio, and it's a good launching pad for his career. I think it's really great. And yeah, impressive, I thought.
You know what I would be curious about with that kind of a contest? Say 200 entries exactly, okay?
And they're all horrible.
Well, that's the question. What percentage fall into which categories? There's some that it's like, wow, this really is worth, you know, serious consideration. Mm-hmm. It's in that front runner area.
Yeah.
There's a couple, it's like, yeah, it's maybe pedestrian or whatever. And then there's going to be a couple of, yeah, this isn't ready to be published.
Yeah, this couldn't even be a convergent script.
Yeah, exactly. which is, again, you got to compare it to some of what's on the rack right now, and some of those are just pedestrian. But how much of that's the writer, how much of that's editorial?
Exactly.
But I'm curious how many were... this isn't ready for prime time. These are okay. These are serious contenders, and just what the mix was.
Yeah, that would be cool to see the breakdown of who, you know, how many were really being bandied about as serious contenders for that spot.
Mm-hmm. And how close were the runner-ups?
Yeah.
Were they ones that if we had read that and this, thinking, maybe they should have picked the other one, or not?
And it's possible they were stronger, but went in a direction that the actual creators couldn't abide.
Exactly. It could be a good story, but not the one they want to go with for that character.
Exactly. So I think there was some reference to that, too, in that back matter.
Interesting. That's cool. I hope they do some more. This is a good way to do one-shots and give some people a chance to get published.
Probably don't have to pay them much, either.
They won. What more?
Exactly.
They won. I mean, come on. No, I'm kidding. Hopefully the guy got a decent page rate. Shall we move on to our other book of the week?
Yeah.
This is Ivar Timewalker number 5. This is from Valiant. Did we talk about the first issue of this series? I think we might have. I forget.
You may have mentioned it. We didn't review it.
Okay. I certainly read it. I've been a fan of this character for quite some time. I love a good time travel story. And they're kind of hard to find because they fall into certain categories. There's they travel back in time, have an adventure, and then they're done. But the time travel itself isn't part of the plot. It's just a vehicle. This is the kind of series where the time travel is an integral part of the plot in a way that it just isn't in many stories. And Fred Van Lente is the writer here. Francis Portella is doing the art. It's solid art, it's good stuff, but Van Lente is just doing some fun stuff with the story. And like one of the issues past, we saw multiple versions of a given character, because again, time travel, that really had to, I think, push that artist, I don't remember if it was the same one or not, into doing some, okay, can you have multiple versions of the same character, make them clearly distinguishable from each other? We get two versions of one character here, but they're blatantly different. Whereas in the previous issue, they were subtly different. But the way this issue begins, the way this issue ends, the stuff that happens in between, there's some fun stuff that you can do when you've got a time traveler as your lead character that you can't and frankly shouldn't do in any other case. Have you been reading Ivar? Are you familiar with the character?
I never have ever read an Ivar book.
Really?
It's my first one.
Okay. I've been enjoying the series and the one back in the day. Again, time travel fan myself, so that's part of it.
I think, was this part of like the second wave of Valiant titles back in the 90s?
It might have even been the third or fourth wave.
Okay, it wasn't in the launch stuff.
Oh, no.
Harbinger and XO and all that stuff, because I don't remember it.
The launch wave back in the day was Harbinger, XO, Solar, Magnus.
Yeah.
Afterwards, we got things like Archer and Armstrong and Eternal Warrior, and I think after that, we finally got Ivar.
Yeah, I think by the second wave, I was done reading comics for a while. I was on a break.
That's a shame. You missed some good stuff.
I did. Stupid family.
It happens. Yeah. Ivar is one of the three brothers. His other brothers, both of which show up here, include the Eternal Warrior and Armstrong of Archer and Armstrong. And I love the interplay between Ivar and his brothers. They just did some fun stuff there with the family dynamic. And that's something that this version is playing with in a very different way than the previous iterations of Valiant have done.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot of fun to read.
Now, at the end, they give you the creative team at the very end of this book. Is that common?
They tend to do that. Not just at Valiant, but at other publishers. I've seen that sometimes on a Marvel or a DC book.
And it says you have just experienced pre-apocalyptic, but then at the beginning, it's Breaking History Part 1. So is that part of a bigger, is pre-apocalyptic part of a bigger event?
I took that as the chapter name, and Breaking History was the arc.
Oh, okay.
The storyline name.
Okay. I was looking for something that wasn't there.
No, it's actually a little confusing.
I really did like the banter back and forth. They have good rapport, the two main characters. It's really, really solid. And I laughed and thought it was there. They had some really funny stuff going on back there. And I really enjoyed bringing Armstrong in.
Mm-hmm.
Or Archer. I get confused.
Armstrong. Archer is there, but just in the background.
Yeah, I thought that was very clever the way they did that. And also another laugh out loud moment. So that was some really good stuff Some of the time travel stuff was lost on me, and there's you know, four issues of history with this character that I don't know. And so I lost a little bit of that, but I really enjoyed the characterizations, and I'm not sure who I'm supposed to be rooting for, the older dude or the younger dude, but they're both pretty cool, and I liked them both. And it was kind of a real fun read, so I gave it a B.
Yeah, for me, solid B, good stuff. It's one of those where I think if you read it, you get one thing out of it. If you read it again, you get more out of it, which is always a fun kind of a deal. And I liked how this was, you know, it's one piece of a bigger story, but there's enough in this issue to provide some payoff and just a return on the investment of getting this issue.
Yeah.
And that's something where I think a lot of comics kind of fall flat of, yeah, you got to read it in the bigger picture. It makes sense. Again, chapter of a story versus a story. I think Valiant, by and large, is doing a pretty good job giving a better return on investment.
Now, is this one of the ones that they are relaunching? They're doing some minis, I think, with some of their mainline characters. I'm not sure exactly what their game plan is.
There was some press release that just went out that I haven't had time to read yet, and I'm not sure. But one of the things that they do over at Valiant, as is happening at Marvel, DC, and most other publishers, is you got a storyline, and periodically you retitle it, you renumber it, just to get some renewed interest. And I don't like that practice, but I can also understand Valiant's point of view on this, because they're doing some really good books. The orders aren't where they could be and should be, at least in terms of where I think the quality stacks up compared to the Marvel, DC books and other stuff.
Is it just as likely that a publisher like Valiant can do as much harm as good when they do this? A smaller publisher like that? That maybe doesn't have the publicity and marketing arm of a big two that can easily stop and relaunch titles. That's my only concern is, you know, we have something like the Laramie Taylor book over at Image that did a series of miniseries, and you know, just it didn't get anybody to come back. And I mean, not just because of starting a new number one, but you see a lot of those happening where they try to relaunch that second miniseries or that second series volume, and it just doesn't grab the people like the first series did.
Well, I think it's not a question of is it dangerous for any particular size publisher to do it, but is it dangerous in general?
Yeah.
You've given people a jumping off point. You know, if I finished a series and you now have to essentially resell me on getting the replacement series that if it had just had an incremental number of the same title, I would have gotten out of habit. That's foolish to me. It never makes sense. Now, there are some times where it's a little more justifiable than others of, oh, well, this is a major change or a new creator, whatever. But back in the day, you know, in the 80s and even into the 90s and stuff, and certainly prior to that, you could change writers every other issue, and as long as the story flowed, it didn't matter, you know? So having to do a new volume because you've changed creative teams, that doesn't make sense to me. And you're killing I don't say the back issue sales, but the concept of continuity and the concept of history of your characters. Because somebody would look at some of these things and say, well, there's only X issues of this to go check, and I've got everything. Well, no, you got to go back a couple of volumes to really get everything, and it just gets confusing to recommend books, you know? If somebody wants to go get Captain America number one, well, which comic are they getting? You know, with Valiant, they're doing a good job about it, at least using different titles to make that a little clearer. This is Ivar versus, you know, Time Walker, which is what the original series was back in the day. But anytime you give a reader a jumping off point, assume they're going to take it. Anytime you give them a jumping on point, assume they might consider it. So the reality is they need to do it if they're not getting the sales they expect or want. It's an easy way to raise the profile of the book. And the other sad reality is on an ongoing series, sales generally just go down. But I think you're better off solving that problem than, well, let's just try a new number one.
Yeah, I think of the Valiant titles, most of them hover around the 10,000 mark. And with a small publisher with a lean staff, I think that's probably a viable number. But I don't know how much lower it can go and still remain a viable issue.
The impression I've gotten from them is it's viable. for their financial model and stuff. It's not where they think it ought to be and where they would want it to be, but they are, despite claiming a 25-year history, which Valiant, the concept, has, this Valiant is still a startup.
Yeah.
They're only a couple of years in, and for where they're at and what they're doing, I think they're doing some strong stuff. I think more stores ought to check it out. I think more readers ought to check it out. And they should be doing things to make it more worth people's while to do that. And I'm not entirely sure what would be the best avenues to doing that. Maybe crossover with DC and Marvel or something like that. You know, XO versus Iron Man or whatever. I mean, they've actually done that in the past, the previous Valiant and stuff. Things like that could be fun and get people to recognize, oh, these characters are out there. It's cool.
What's in it for DC to do that?
For DC, absolutely nothing, since they don't own either XO or Iron Man. But I take
sorry, Marvel.
I know what you meant. Those pesky details. That's the thing, is there's less in it for Marvel or DC or the other publisher necessarily, you know? But they need to figure out a way to make it worthwhile. I think what's going to help Valiant is having gotten the movie deal. They're going to do, I think it was Bloodshot and Harbinger as some of their first films, looking like it'll build up to the Harbinger War and stuff. So if they can stay true to the comics and therefore make it an easy way for the people who see the movies to read the comics, and if they don't get it too mired in having stopped and restarted the series too many times, that could really raise the profile and stuff. The risk is by the time those movies come out, which is a few years off, I think, I don't recall, our superhero universe is going to feel played out to the average person.
What Harbinger story is your wish list for which story arc is it that you think would make the best transfer to movie, to the big screen?
Oh man, that's a tough one.
Or what was the other title you said?
Bloodshot.
Oh, okay. Oh, I'd just like him to do that Mark Waid Zero issue.
That
would be a great, probably not a full 2-hour movie out of it, but there was a lot of great stuff in there.
If I were going to do a Harbinger movie, I would have them going up against Hardcore. Because you've got people who have special powers and stuff, and then you've got people with technological augmentation to mimic those powers in kind of an Ultra Boy manner, one at a time and stuff. So it gives you the ability to do a lot of really cool special effects, some interesting fight scenes, and have, you know, okay, who's in the right, who's in the wrong, kind of ethically, morally, or whatever. You know, if you're really opposed to people having these powers and such, and then you do scientific experimentation on people to give them those powers, well, that's kind of crazy. I just hope they do a good job with the movies. I hope the audience for superhero movies and franchises like that is still strong when those come out.
Are they going to be incredibly reliant upon CG?
What movie these days isn't?
True, but that's a very different budget stratosphere.
My understanding is they got a large investment from possibly an Indian company. I forget where the company was from.
I think it was Chinese.
Or maybe it was Chinese. Overseas somewhere. Like 9-figure deal. So okay. They've got some stuff they can do to, they can afford to do it right.
Okay.
But
I think you have to.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You don't want to go cheap on that, but you don't want to waste your money either. I hope they spend the money intelligently and carefully. But I think Bloodshot and Harbinger would be fun things to do as movies and could work out well. But there's also a lot that could work out not so well. Get the wrong actors, do the wrong story, do it at the wrong time. It's just the audience isn't there or something like that. I want to see them successful. I think doing the movies could get their stuff higher profile within the comic shops and stuff like that, which would be good. But I've also seen cases where by the time the movie came out that was based on a comic, it really didn't matter. Because the comic and stuff, to a degree, the company was long since forgotten. I'm thinking specifically here of Radical Comics. Came out of the gate strong, did some really great stuff. Did some movie deals. We've actually seen one of them come to fruition with the Dwayne Johnson Hercules film. But, I mean, Radical just isn't publishing comics these days.
Yeah, Hercules just happened.
It was a year or two back. About a year ago, I guess. Yeah.
Okay.
So not that long ago. But again, by the time the movie came out, nobody remembered the comic. And there was nothing for them to leverage it in the comics with. But their end game was to be able to also do movies. So, I mean, it worked out well for them, I guess, as an entertainment company, not as a comic company.
Right.
But few companies are just comic companies these days. And it's neither good nor bad, just kind of is.
So what else did you read this week?
Absolutely nothing.
Me too. Goose egg.
This is the week that Convergence ends, so I'm looking forward to that, just to see how it ends. But yeah, this is, again, we're recording these early so I can go on vacation. Figure when I get back from vacation, I will be way behind on my reading, have very little time to catch up as I do some podcasting and stuff, and then get ready to go head to San Diego Comic-Con. Mm-hmm. So I've got a thread on the forum for what I'm rating everything. I haven't updated it in a while, and it probably won't be until late July that I update it again. I'm at least trying to keep doing the ratings and keep track of all that so I can update it later. It's just a matter of having the time. Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
I think that does it.
Cool. Join us next week as we discuss Age of Reptiles, Ancient Egyptians number 1 from Dark Horse Comics, Justice Inc. Avenger number 1 from Dynamite Entertainment, and Non-Player number 2 from Image Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.